Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets. If you don't win your first bet, that's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
You know you've got a comeback in you. When you take the next step, you're going to make it count. For your career, for your family, for your life. You can earn a degree you're proud of with Purdue Global. Purdue Global is backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected and innovative public universities. This is your chance. This is your opportunity. This is your comeback. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
The Armstrong and Getty Show.
This is a very... I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
Please. No, that's
all. As we await for the records from the National Archives, are you absolutely certain, are you absolutely positive there is no record of any complaint by Tara Reid against you?
I am absolutely positive that no one that I'm aware of ever has been made aware of any complaint, a formal complaint made by or a complaint by Tara Reid against me at the time this allegedly happened 27 years ago or until I announced for press. Well, I guess it was in April or May of this year.
Woo! So that's from Joe Biden this morning. Now, he did it at some point. He opened with, he unequivocally stated that this never happened. He never raped or whatever you want to call it, this woman, Tara Reid. I said to Sean, though, we might as well play the embarrassing Biden clip. And Sean said, you're going to have to be more specific. But I picked out the one where he sounded the worst. But mostly it was fine. It was Joe Biden saying, no, I never did this. I didn't do anything like this. I've never done anything like this. There's no complaint, blah, blah, blah. And we're thinking it's over.
Lon He J. Chen is the David and Diane Steffi Research Fellow at the Hoover Institution, Director of Domestic Policy Studies at Stanford University, and joins us now. Lon He, how are you, sir?
I am fine. How are you, gentlemen?
We're great, all things considered. So do you think the Joe Biden sexual assault thing is more or less over?
I don't know. And I say I don't know because the Democratic Party and where it is now is very different than where the Democratic Party was when Joe Biden spent most of his time in politics. And what I mean by that is the elements of the far left that have essentially occupied the party, and we saw this during the presidential primary, I think are going to continue to push Biden. They're going to continue to push him on this. And while under ordinary circumstances, an interview like that would have kind of lanced the boil, I'm just not so sure that folks are going to be willing to let go of this at this point. And this is just one of those issues that's really hard. I mean, how do you square what he said with the way that he treated, for example, Brett Kavanaugh during the Kavanaugh confirmation hearings? I think these are questions that are going to continue. And I'm just not sure that interview today did it for him.
Well, I get those as questions from the right, because I do still have those questions. The way you wanted to change college campuses, the way you went after Kavanaugh, I need more explanation for how that squares with this. But in terms of the left, what would the left push him to do? I mean, what else can he do?
Well, I think, you know, you saw this with the Washington Post editorial board saying he ought to release his papers, make them completely open, the ones that are held at the University of Delaware. I think more questions will arise. There's some dispute, for example, over whether, in fact, the National Archives is the place where a complaint from his Senate time would be held. I think that's a question.
Yeah, he said no personnel stuff would be in those archives that people are demanding opening, so there's just no point.
Yeah, but you know, I think that's not going to be satisfactory to some, you know, particularly. And here's where the thing on the left comes to play, because I think on the left, you know, there are some who are agitating and saying, look, you know, is there more there? We cannot have a nominee of our party who, the nominee of the Democratic Party, that is, who is tainted by this kind of thing, and they want to know more. Now, that may just be a way of them trying to get Biden out, which is highly, highly improbable now. But my point is simply that I just think that the agitation among some quarters of the left is going to continue to dog his campaign.
So, yeah, I'm reminded of the quote from Orwell that we more or less started the show with this morning, in which he's talking in 1984 about the reason you acquire power is for power. Power is the goal. And if the AOC crowd can get rid of the last vestige of the old moderate Democrat crowd, they don't care if they lose to Trump in the doing of that. In the same way that, like, your dispatch anti-Trump Republicans, they're more than willing to lose to Biden to get rid of Trump. So anyway, speaking of the election and parties and the rest of it, as a libertarian leaning fellow, I was fairly excited to see Justin Amash, a non-crackpot mostly, get into the race. What do we know about him? What do you think of the dynamics of that? If indeed he does, and I think he will.
Yeah, you know, this is a tough one. I've kind of heard it argued both ways, that his presence hurts Biden and his presence hurts Trump. I've kind of heard it both ways. I mean, I think our political system is better off when we have people who fill parts of lanes or parts of people's political interests that wouldn't be filled otherwise. And I do think that there are a number of people who are concerned on the right about how the Republican Party seems increasingly comfortable embracing big government, how it's increasingly comfortable embracing lots of spending, how it's increasingly comfortable embracing the role of the nanny state in policing people's lives. And I think Justin Amash presents an alternative to them. Now, for the left...
You just explained the part to me that makes the most sense. So that damages a Republican candidate because he's small government. Trump. But I have heard also the arguments that it hurts Biden more. Please explain that to me. I don't get it at all.
Well, I think that the notion there is that you've got this sort of group of voters who... they're just uncomfortable with Biden for whatever reason, but they can't vote for Trump because they really don't like Trump. So they need to put their vote somewhere else. So they're going to put it with Justin Amash, that basically he's a placeholder for whatever it is they don't like about Joe Biden and they don't like about Donald Trump. I don't think that's a very big percentage of people to sort of betray my true feeling on this. I don't think there's a ton of people who would vote that way. But the idea, again, is just, do you have an alternative to vote for who's not, you know, you really don't like Joe Biden for whatever reason, and you can't bring yourself to vote for Trump? Well, then you vote for someone like Amash, who has been, you know, principled on a number of different things. And so, you know, that's where you put your vote.
Hey, Jack, do you mind if we do a minute? I know we've been talking about this a lot, but it's always great to talk to Lan He Chen of the Hoover Institution, Stanford University, and get your point of view, Lan He. Let's talk a little bit about civil liberties and the COVID response. What's your take on what's happening these days?
Well, people are understandably uncomfortable with the idea, for example, of tech companies like, you know, Apple and Facebook having more control over personal data that could be used at some point down the road for the gain of those companies. You know, it'd be one thing if you said, look, we're going to use the data to geolocate people to ensure we're not spreading coronavirus. That's one thing. But I think people are nervous because the tech companies in particular have been shown to not be trustworthy.
Well, in the limited time we have, and I'm sorry to interrupt, but what about the mass closures of so many businesses and the rationale going from flattening the curve to just eliminating cases if we can?
Yeah, just right. Last night, well, you had Southern California saying, no, we make our own decisions in our county, not the governor.
Yeah. I mean, to be clear, the goalposts keep shifting on this. The reason why we were sheltering in place to flatten the curve was precisely because we didn't want to overburden our healthcare system. It's clear our healthcare system is not going to be overburdened. So now that we've achieved that goal, we do need to responsibly reopen the economy. We cannot be out there. I've heard people argue, well, what we need to do is we need to save every life possible. That is not the goal of public policy in this case. It should not be the goal because it's unachievable fundamentally. We have to realize that, by the way, there's a ton of other problems with closing the economy and keeping it closed. People's livelihoods, people's health, that's affected too.
Yeah, that's the point we've been trying to make, and it was funny, strange. I read this allegedly great piece in Politico in which the guy did not even acknowledge that a crushed economy will cost lives. Maybe half as many lives as the COVID, maybe as many, maybe three times as many. So we're not trading lives for money. We're trading lives for money and lives.
Yeah. And that's one thing, by the way, these epidemiological models, they never account for.
Sure.
They don't account for the fact that people are sheltering in place, which means rates of obesity and rates of other diseases are going to rise, that elective procedures have been canceled, which means cancer diagnoses have been missed. There's all sorts of things. And I'm not saying that the number of those people overwhelms the number of people who would have died from coronavirus, but you got to consider all of that. And public policy has to be balanced. It can't be out of balance. And I fear that right now there's a little bit of out of balance in some states, California especially.
Well, we appreciate you taking the time to talk to us today. Hope you and yours are healthy.
We are. Thank you.
Thanks, Lon Heath.
I heard another explanation of why some people think that Amash getting into the race as a libertarian hurts Biden more than Trump. I could get into that if you get next hour.
If you don't, grab it at armstrongandgetty.com via podcast if you like. Yeah, I'm kind of mystified by that theory, too, so I'd like to hear it.
There's another hour of this show? Yep. Oh. Some people get it. Very exciting.
Armstrong and Getty.
If a new house is on your wish list in the next 5 years, grow your savings faster and experience your dreams with an Ohio Homebuyer Plus account from Kemba Financial Credit Union. A savings account specifically designed to save for a new home where you can earn 7% APY, a $500 matching bonus, and a $1,500 mortgage closing cost credit. Learn more at Kemba.org. Offer expires March 31st, 2025. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. NMLS 292230. Equal housing lender. Federally insured by NCUA.
Are you still searching for your perfect place to call home? Well, now is the time to buy at Fisher Homes. If you're looking to move in before the end of 2024, May could be your last opportunity to start building your dream home and close before the year's end. If you're hoping to move in even sooner, Fisher Homes also has homes that are move-in ready and waiting for you, where you can start enjoying the benefits of homeownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with a new home advisor today at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home.
We went from normal life, healthy child to acute lymphoblastic leukemia or B-cell ALL. The St. Jude team came up to get CJ via ambulance. Shortly after that, I noticed a rainbow. It meant that there was hope. We were driving into hope. To have hope is to have your child healthy, and we have that because of St. Jude.
You can help kids fight childhood cancer. Please become a St. Jude Partner in Hope today by visiting musicgives.org.